The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. I am Hugh Hewitt from the ReliefFactor.com studio inside of the Beltway with good news, with good news, with good news. I know you watch cable news. A few of you do. 3% of the Americans do. And you may think the world's going to hell in a handbasket. It's not. Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, spoke yesterday, and his words were balm. Now, markets reacted in various ways, but I want to tell you what you should think about it, not how you ought to invest on it. Investments, look, there's no explaining why Amazon is the Secretariat of Stocks, other than the disintermediation, as I explained yesterday, of old retail and the mass migration of money to Amazon and Target and Costco. There's no other reason than macroeconomic changes in the economy that will take us decades, understand in retrospect, but which are occurring in real time. I thought last night of the tragic but very vivid memories of the refugee crisis of a few years ago, when millions and millions of people had to flee the genocide in Syria, the civil war in Libya, and other unrest throughout the Arab and sub-Saharan world. And they basically walked to Europe. They swam, many drowned. It was a tragedy, but you saw an unprecedented migration of people. Now, in wars and disruptions throughout recorded history, refugees on the road have marked conflict. Well, now we see refugees in finance. The analogy is not at all the same in suffering. It is, however, in terms of monumental scale. Money is moving in a monumental scale from one continent of investments to another. It is all moving into the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. I only own one stock, Amazon. I always declare that. But high tech generally and other manufacturers of the future are the beneficiaries of a worldwide migration of money away from the old ways that people did things to the new ways. Now, that was underway, and it was large, but it was not a worldwide stampede of money. And that worldwide stampede of money is going to continue. Now, the good news is it's going to mean an economic recovery from the virus much quicker and much healthier than I had ever imagined, because people are eager to work. They achieve dignity through work. They achieve security for their families through work. People want to work. And when you see companies like Amazon hiring 175,000 people, you know that every new economy, the transformed economy, the migratory destination economy, is doing the same thing. And you begin to realize we accelerated a productivity increase through painful cuts. I don't know if you ever read the book Good to Great. It's a hard book to read for CEOs. In Good to Great, there is some very important advice for CEOs who have good companies and want to become great companies. And it's hire your B team players. Fire your B team, excuse me. Fire your beloved B team. You might love them. You might think they're the greatest people in the world. Fire them. And the reason is they're holding you back. You might love them. You might have affections and ties that bind, but you've got to fire them. That's what productivity requires. That's the ruthless efficiency of marketplace economics. That's the free market creative destruction that we have seen build America over three centuries into the dynamic powerhouse that it is and will remain if the regulators remain at bay. And so what is happening, and in a compressed space of time, is hard, painful choices were made because they had to be made because there was no money. There was no revenue. So companies cut ruthlessly. Everyone they could. Everyone they had to. And they won't be bringing back everyone. They're going to be leaving behind their B-team players. And that might be good for the B-team people, by the way. They might be better suited and make more money in a new place in the economy, but they did not want to go there. This ruthless efficiency is introduced by the virus, the human cost of which is inestimable, but the economic consequence of which is productivity. Now, I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal lead opinion story. Jay Powell lets it loose. Jay Powell is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. It reads, the Fed chief told financial markets that the central bank will keep interest rates near zero through at least 2022 while revving up bond buying to record levels. We're not even thinking about raising rates, Mr. Powell said to his press conference following the Federal Open Markets Committee's June meeting. He also stressed that markets were operating smoothly. That was a key deal. When the government shut down the economy and induced a market-induced coma, the markets, the bond markets, the treasury markets, they were all screwed up. You couldn't buy a house even though interest rates were ridiculously low. You couldn't buy debt. You couldn't sell debt. They're working reasonably well now, according to the Wall Street Journal. And the Fed predicted an unemployment rate down to 9.3% this year. Quote, which would be a fantastic recovery. They also see the economy growing by 5% in 2021, 3.5% in 2022, a jobless rate of 5.5% in 2022. I believe that's low, but I also believe it's precarious. If you elect Joe Biden, that's not going to happen. Bureaucrats will descend upon this and destroy the economic vitality that Donald Trump bought, the raw animal energy spirits of the market that he has unleashed, the deregulation that he has brought about. We have to reelect Donald Trump if we want economic recovery. It is that simple. But I am such a bull this morning. Disneyland is reopening on July 15th. Disneyland. Is that not terrific? There's another story, by the way. This is a market story brought to you by Birch Gold because it's so appropriate. You get to Birch Gold, by the way, one of my show sponsors, by going to HughGold.com or texting my name, Hugh, to 474747. Headline on the front landing page of the Wall Street Journal. A scramble for gold is redrawing the map of a market. More than 20 million troy ounces of gold have landed in New York vaults over the past 3 months. The story begins, New York faces a gold rush after the pandemic threw precious metals markets into disarray, setting off a scramble by traders to cut their losses. Bullion vaults, approved by the COMEX division of the New York Mercantile Exchange, house a record 29.7 million troy ounces. Almost three-quarters of that gold, weighing as much as nine fully loaded Boeing 737-700 airplanes, has arrived in the past 3 months. It has redrawn the international gold map. Now, I told you months ago you needed to diversify into gold. Guess who is diversifying to gold? Everyone. Gold is up to 1740 this morning. I told you originally to do it at 1400. Keep doing it. Diversify. Not your whole portfolio. Don't become a nutty gold bug. Become a diversified investor and go to HughGold.com. Get in touch with Birch Gold. Tell them you've got, you know, say you've got $50,000 in retirement. 5,000 of it should be in gold, maybe 10. And it's physical gold that they store, that they put your name on. It will go up and down. Doesn't always go up. I'm not guaranteeing you that. I'm guaranteeing you that in times of uncertainty, gold is reliable. So diversify. If you want to buy bullion or coins for your own safety deposit box, that's what I do. Go ahead and do that also by texting 474747, my name Hugh, H-U-G-H. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what is a fantastic recovery and how the Democrats will kill it. You really can't vote for any Democrat anywhere, no matter how, even if you dislike Donald Trump more than you've disliked anyone in your life, you still have to vote for him if you want your job or your kid's job or your grandkid's job to be there. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. June 11th, 2020, in the year of the plague. When the Federal Reserve did its estimate yesterday, they predicted that 2020 will go in the books with a 6.5% contraction. Who would have thunk it? In January, we were riding the greatest economic wave ever, and then the board broke. Because of a virus released by the Chinese Communist Party, either recklessly or willfully, after they've seen what it did to their economy to make sure the rest of the country, the world, did not catch it and surpass it. There's a calculated move by communists. And it's done enormous damage, and the grieving is great. But the world is figuring out that it targets a very specific group of people, the very old, the obese, and people with heart disease. Even people like me with asthma are not as concerned as we were days and weeks and months ago. The data is just coming in. And we, by the way, with these massive demonstrations, we have decided to embrace herd immunity, whether or not we wanted to. Job Creators Network is a sponsor of this show, and they have teamed up with doctors all across the country to give Americans facts about the coronavirus. Not fear, but facts. The fact is that the virus hit some zip codes very, very hard. A mere 10% of the counties in the United States accounted for 95% of all COVID deaths. In some 50% of Americans' counties, there wasn't one COVID death. Tragically, 42% of the deaths occurred in nursing homes and assisted living centers as it ravaged old people, pneumonia being the typical suspect. The sad truth is that the overwhelming majority of COVID death happened to people over the age of 65. Now, flattenthefear.com is what Job Creators Network is doing to finally organize and distribute the information that people need. Get the facts, find out who is vulnerable and who really isn't vulnerable. There are always outliers. There are always rare cases of a child who gets a Kawasaki disease-like syndrome because of COVID and who may die. I believe it's 8 people under the age of 10 in the entire country. It's like drownings and traffic accidents. Tragic, tragic. But not something you plan a world around. That's why Disneyland's reopening. You're not going to see a lot of old people going to Disneyland. At least you shouldn't. You're not going to see a lot of people with a compromised immune system because it's going to be a giant, swirling cloud of virus. But most people don't get that sick, and some people don't get sick at all when they get the virus. And we will get through it, and treatments are getting better, and a vaccine is on the way. But flattenthefear.com is a brilliant idea by the Job Creators Network. Bravo on them. I'll also be talking about the economy, I think, in the Heritage Hour next week. I'm now partnered with the Heritage Foundation to start pumping facts into this election season, facts into your brain. The Heritage Foundation has long existed as the preeminent conservative network in America, the place to go for ideas and experts. So I finally got together with them and said, Let's do a regular feature every Tuesday. Let's get more Heritage people on. But you got to sponsor the show. They said, fine. They know the show is heard all across the world and leads the way in news. And so the influencers and the people who know what to talk about, they're all here. Heritage.org. And if you go to HughForHeritage.com, you'll get yourself a free copy, a chapter out of their new Mandate for Change 2020. I want to play for you Vice President Pence yesterday as a prelude. Well, I'm actually going to save it. Because next segment, I'm going to talk to you about race in America. And I'm going on Al Sharpton's show on Sunday. They said, really? You'll come on? Sure, of course I'll go on. I've been teaching the race cases. I've been teaching how Justice Harlan in his dissent in the 1899 case of Plessy v. Ferguson was right, how Lincoln was right. We have to be a colorblind society. We absolutely have to be a colorblind society. Christians have no problem understanding that racism is a sin to be condemned and extirpated. I also have no problem saying America is not systemically racist. It is a country with racists in it. My guess is between 50, 60,000. I talked about that with Hillary Clinton. Hardcore white supremacists, but it's not systemically racist. And we'll talk about race on the other side. But the good news is the economy's coming back much, much faster than I ever expected. Stay tuned, please, to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Where do we go from here, my friend? Is this the way our story ends? Hey, man, sing me a song. When we were everyone, we were more than just a slice of American pie. I can't stop singing along. Time a long, long time ago, Chevys and Levis played on the radio. No cell phones, just 20,000 lights swaying on a Saturday night. All right.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Give you a little five for fighting every morning. To remind you, it's a great country. It's a wonderful country to spend a wonderful summer in. Even after the tragedy of COVID, even after the economic collapse, even after 20 years of war, even after the losses, it's a great country. Best place in the world to live, best time in history to be alive. And you and I get to share it together every morning. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for joining me. Let me talk to you about race. The president addressed it yesterday. But before we go to what he had to say, I want to play for you the nuttiness of the left. They're demanding that the police be defunded. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the gifted, charismatic, hard left future of the Democratic Party, went on Good Morning America yesterday and just laid it out. Here is the future Democratic Party leader. I'm sure she's going to be the nominee of their party someday, but she right now controls their House delegation. Nancy Pelosi is a figurehead, just like Joe Biden is a figurehead. The hard left controls the Democrats. Here is AOC on GMA with George Stephanopoulos, cut number three.
Well, you know, we can't necessarily, I don't think we can control what is happening right now in this moment, right? Our job as elected officials is to listen. And we can't control what, you know, that everyone is going out in the street and saying Black Lives Matter. And just a few years ago, everyone said that Black Lives Matter polled poorly, that it was divisive, that it required too much explanation. But these are everyday people going out into their community saying, this is what we want for ourselves and for our city council budget.
What they want is to defund the police. She says, cut number four, exactly that.
Well, I think there's one question that is interesting here is that when it comes to funds, it's not always just about the number of officers in the street. It's about these police precincts that have tanks, that have military weaponry, and frankly have a degree of material resources and warlike weaponry that people ask, why does a local police precinct have this in the first place? So when we talk about defunding, it can show up in multiple ways. Additionally, the other way that we talk about, in this is that when people ask for healthcare, when they ask for housing, when they ask for education, people always say, how are you going to pay for it? And so what this movement is doing, first and foremost, it's important to note that this is directed at city councils and mayors. And so you should look to see if your city is having this conversation. But first, and the other question here too is, I think it's a valid question for people to ask, what should be our number one budget priority at all? Does any agency deserve to be funded more than almost all the others for healthcare, housing, and youth combined?
I'm glad to have that conversation. Police is the number one priority, and fire. Always has been, always will be. If your community isn't safe, you are not secure. Americans, everyone from the beginning of time, have demanded security. Now, the Democrats have trouble explaining what defund the police means. The Free Beacon provided a montage of their explanations. Cut number one.
Are you for defunding the police?
How are you defining defund the police?
Part of that cry is a desire for there to be significant higher investment in communities.
It means that we're in a moment and we've got to take advantage of the moment.
What people really are crying out for more dollars to be allocated to social support services.
There are better ways to go about that actually lower levels of crime and elevate human potential that are lower cost to taxpayers.
All I'd say is we have to look at the budget.
I don't think we should put more funds in. I think we should look at the culture and the protocols, and they need drastic changes.
A big part of this conversation really is about reimagining how we do public safety in America, which I support.
I think the idea of having a police-free future is very aspirational, and I am willing to stand with community members who are asking us to think of that as the goal.
But we need to completely dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department. We don't want your damn reforms.
That is Ilhan Omar. She actually gets points for being clear, as is AOC. They want to defund the police. I mean, what part of defund the police do we not understand? Joe Biden understands it's nuts. So he says, I don't believe in that. I want to defund the police by other means. Jim Jordan, congressman from Ohio, spoke to this insanity in the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. Here is ranking minority member Jim Jordan, cut number six.
The people of this great country, you know what else they understand? You know what else they get? They understand that there is a big difference between peaceful protest and rioting. There is a big difference between peaceful protest and looting. There is a big difference between peaceful protest and violence and attacking innocent people. And there is certainly a big difference between peaceful protest and killing police officers. You know what else they get? You know what else the American people fully understand? They know, as the chairman said, the vast, vast majority of law enforcement officers are responsible, hardworking, heroic first responders. They're the officers who protect the Capitol, who protect us every single day. They're the officers who rushed into the Twin Towers on 9/11. They're the officers in every one of our neighborhoods, in every one of our communities, every day, every night, every shift they work, who put their lives on the line to keep our communities safe. And guess what Americans also get? Guess what else they understand? They know it is pure insanity to defund the police. And the fact that my Democrat colleagues won't speak out against this crazy policy is just that frightening. Think about what we've heard in the last few weeks. We've heard the mayors of our two largest cities, Mayor Garcetti, said he wants to defund the police. The mayor of New York says he wants to defund the police. The city council in Minneapolis, a veto-proof majority, says they want to defund the police and abolish the department. This Congress started off with the Democrats, folks on the left, saying we should abolish ICE, then moved to we should abolish the entire Department of Homeland Security, and now they're talking about abolishing the police. This is wrong, and the American people know it's wrong. We should honor the memory of George Floyd and work hard so that nothing like it ever happens again. And we should honor the memory of Dave Patrick Underwood and work hard so that nothing like that ever happens again.
Jim Jordan yesterday in the House saying with great clarity, defund the police is insanity. President Trump held a roundtable at the White House yesterday with African-American leaders, and he talked about the most important thing for race relations in the United States, which is the economy. Cut number 16.
I think that the economy will be, next year will be maybe the best it's ever been. You can already see it with the stock market, how it's been going up, because you have a lot of smart people that are betting on exactly what I'm saying. The stock market is almost as high as it was prior to the plague floating in from China. It was a plague that floated in from China. Now they're learning that it may have been much earlier, which bears out exactly what I've been saying. You saw that word yesterday, that it may have come in a lot sooner than we were told. A friend of mine is Daryl Scott, and he's a great guy, and he's got a tremendous heart. At the same time, he's a tough cookie. I think that's what maybe attracted me to him. Unfortunately, I didn't get attracted to the good parts, but that's a good part too.
Donald Trump then went on to talk about criminal justice reform, cut number 21.
And a big thing is criminal justice reform. I keep hearing about, oh, criminal justice reform, and everyone's trying to take the credit. And that one, I will say, we will take the full credit, because they couldn't have done it without us. And I'm not sure, frankly, that the previous administration tried. They may have, but they certainly couldn't get it done. And the people that came into my office really, really asking very nicely for help. These are not people that are supporters of mine. But once we got it, they took the full credit for themselves, and that's okay, too. But we got done criminal justice reform and all of the other things. I think that one of the elements that people aren't talking about are the opportunity zones that we did with a great senator, your friend from South Carolina, right? You did it with Tim, and it was his idea, and it was a big idea. It was a bold idea, and it's worked much better than in our wildest dreams. We couldn't have thought that that was going to happen.
Criminal justice reform, opportunity centers. The president also talked about the support the administration has for HCBUs, historically black colleges and universities. Cut number 22.
42, 44 people would come to see me every year. The heads of the historically black colleges and universities, and they would come up here, and I got to actually know them. And the first year they came, I thought it was a normal meeting. They were asking for a lot of money, which they were having a hard time getting from previous administrations, and we got it for them. The next year they came back. I said, oh, what are you guys back for? He said, well, we want the money again. I said, aren't we working long-term deals? No, we got the money. And then the third time, I said, I see. So they made you for years, many years, for decades. They had to come back, keep coming back, keep coming back. Not like a lot of others where they get it. And they kept coming back and asking for money. And I said, what's this all about? Why do you have to come every year? Why don't we make a longer-term deal? And we made, I think, a 10-year deal. And they're all funded up, and they're all set. And that's historically black colleges and universities, and they play a tremendous function. I got to be friendly with some of them. I won't tell you what some of them said, how bad it was about the past administration and past administrations. But they were treated very, very badly, and I treated them very good. So they don't have to come back. I said, the only bad thing is I won't see you people anymore, maybe for a long time. And they were okay with that. You know, they can focus on what they really do, which is education. So
Donald Trump has a great record on race. Criminal justice reform, funding of HBCUs, the economic growth, the unemployment until the virus arrived from China. A great record. He's going to run on that record. And believe me, a lot of people aren't going to say it in the black community, but they're going to vote for him. I'll be right back, America, to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt joined by Dr. Michael Oren from Israel, former ambassador of Israel to the United States, former deputy minister of the last government. Dr. Oren joins us each week. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh. Good to be with you.
The headline in the Times of Israel, Israel's coronavirus death toll hits 300 as new infections spike overnight. Now, you and I have talked a lot about politics, the formation of the government, the annexation, the peace process. We have not spent much time talking about coronavirus in Israel. Are you alarmed by these numbers, or are you thinking like I am that we're going to get used to some level of coronavirus?
Yeah, I think we got to be responsible not to be alarmed. There's some interesting statistics showing that the spike are people who have been tested positive but aren't necessarily sick. But with that, they could make other people sick. So be responsible. Israelis have to wear masks. They have not been wearing masks. They have to keep social distancing, and they haven't been keeping social distancing. We have much more aware of it. Even the last day, I've seen more people wearing masks. With that, I don't think there's going to be another lockdown. I don't think the Israeli economy would survive it. I don't think the Israeli population is willing to put up with it.
Well, expand on that a little bit. So we expect a modicum in the United States of socially distancing behavior in closed spaces like markets and shopping. We expect people to have masks on. They're off outside, Michael. I don't know if that's the case in Israel. People are not wearing them outside. Are they wearing them outside in Israel?
Not much. Now, listen, I'm also in Tel Aviv. It's a very young city, and young people haven't been drastically, severely, gravely struck by Corona, but it's interesting. If in the past the spikes were all in the ultra-Orthodox sections of Israel, the most recent spikes have all been in Tel Aviv.
So what does that tell you? Because this is how I see it breaking down. I think people have intuited the elderly and the medically fragile, the obese and people with underlying conditions are at risk, and the young are not. That's what I think we've intuited.
And Israel has the youngest population of any industrialized a country in the world, the youngest population under the age of 30. And obesity, I can't say it's not a problem in this country, but it's nowhere like the United States. And you walk on the beach in Israel and everybody looks like they're an extra in some Hollywood film. in good shape. But still, with that, we would be remiss and irresponsible if we didn't take the necessary measures. What we haven't got to the point yet, we're not wearing a mask and not socially distancing is considered inconsiderate to other people.
No, we're not there yet either. I've written a column about that. It drives me a little bit crazy, but I think that's just what we're going to live with. It's inconsiderate in shopping malls and shopping centers. Tell me a little bit about the Arab community in Judea and Samaria. Tell me about Gaza. Tell me about the Palestinian Authority. What is the condition there?
Well, we don't know the exact numbers, either in Judea, Samaria, or in Gaza, though Hamas is showing that when it wants to clamp down on a population, it can clamp down on a population and keep them forcibly socially distanced. We don't know yet. And yesterday, for the first time, Palestinian workers started coming back into Israel. Now, people don't know this, but about 180,000 Palestinians come into Israel every single day through 36 checkpoints in the West Bank. Mostly they wait between 5 and 7 minutes. They come in here. These are the highest levels of Palestinian workers in this country since before the Second Intifada in the year 2000. And there's also workers who were starting to come in from Gaza, which is totally unprecedented. But they've been stopped because of Corona. Yesterday, the Bethlehem crossing opened. 10,000 people tried to get through one crossing, and everyone was jammed in there. Now, if that's not a Corona hotbed, I don't know what is. It's a petri dish. And but we have to weigh that against the loss of Palestinian workers, which are essential for certainly the Israeli construction industry, the agricultural industry, which has really come to a standstill. People aren't picking fruit off the trees. This food is dying. And it's good for stability. It's basically coexistence.
And give me your understanding of how the high tech sector and especially the medical sector and the science and research sector has snapped back. Are they at work on the cures? I've always said we needed Israeli science here. Like we do in water, we need Israeli science in virology.
It not just snapped back. It didn't have to snap back. It never stopped. Matter of fact, they were working around the clock all through the lockdown. So they're going full force, whether it be Israeli technologies that help with mapping and with monitoring. I've been involved with some of these technologies, just, full disclosure. And it's been problematic trying to actually sell them to the United States because Americans are very, very cautious about the whole question of liberty and interference with freedom.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Yeah, you know this, Matt. But
you know that, Michael. You grew up here. You know we don't like that.
That's why I only work with systems that are fully legal also in an American context. But having said that, if you don't monitor this pandemic at some point and map, for example, if you don't know that there's a gathering on a university campus that you have 200 people in one room. You got to know that. The university has to know that. And there are technologies that enable you to do this. You're just not going to be able to get a handle on it, and universities are not going to be able to open, which would be a catastrophe, not just for the universities, but for the university towns.
Michael, let's talk about that next week, because as a former Princeton professor, as an American turned Israeli, I want to get your perspective on this technology. I have opted in to being part of the giant collective gathering of data on COVID. But I know Americans aren't going to like it, and I want to hear your perspective on it. It's unique, and we'll do that next week when Michael Oren joins us from Israel, as he always does. Thank you, Dr. Michael Oren. I'll be right back, America, hour two of the Thursday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show, straight ahead.